T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Thank you for being with us today. Damon and Ratto with Whitey in for Damon. And Damon is, Ray, Damon's really missing out because our next guest is, I mean, where to begin? A broadcast legend. He loves baseball as much as any human has loved baseball. He does games for MLB Network, TBS. He's done the Olympics. Most impressive to me, the former play-by-play voice of the Spirits of St. Louis. Check out his new show, Back on the Record on HBO. Bob Costas is with us. How are you, Bob?
I'm good, Whitey, and you know, we've never met face-to-face, but Whitey Gleason suggests some guy I once bumped into in a pool hall in Brooklyn. That's kind of a, you know, kind of a film noir kind of name.
It is.
Whitey Gleason.
Yes, it has kind of a throwback quality to it. Thanks for pointing that out. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it could be in a Philip Marlowe book.
Yeah, before this, he was a 1930s boxing promoter.
Right. You know, Ray, you got it. You nailed it. I was searching for it, but you nailed it.
Let's start. This is before the two MVPs are named, so we can't ask you anything specific about either of them. But based on what we saw this year, and never mind what the demographics may say, was this a good year for baseball, specifically in rekindling interest among a younger generation, just based on, you know, Shohei Ohtani, Aaron Judge, all the other things that happened? Was this a good year for baseball, or was it just another year for baseball and that they're still going to lose the youth at the same rate they've been losing it?
Well, I don't have concrete evidence or figures here, but my sense is it was a good year for baseball overall. And I had an interview last week with Rob Manfred, and he told me that some of their research showed that the viewership for the postseason especially was up among the younger demographic. And you have to measure it in the various ways that they receive it, streaming or this way or that, as opposed to classic over-the-air broadcasts. But apparently there's research that indicates that. Certainly they didn't do themselves any harm, and this postseason was very exciting, and there were a lot of really good storylines during the course of this season. So you'd have to think that it had to be a plus.
Bob, this is Whitey Gleason again, and I've just got a crackerjack of a question for you. As for MLB free agency, do you think the Giants still have a shot if they ever did at Aaron Judge? And where do you think their free agent focus should be if they don't have a shot at Judge?
Well, there are a number of holes in their lineup. The lineup needs shoring up. There's no question about that, and Aaron Judge would be one answer. I imagine they still have a chance, but only, my sense is, only if the Yankees mess this up. I think Judge is doing the right thing in testing the market so that the Yankees will have to offer him something close to the maximum. But when you think about it, the Giants have a fine history. The Giants are among the teams that have really significant histories. But the Yankees are the Yankees, and he's worn the pinstripes for his entire career. And he's on a trajectory that will place him in Monument Park alongside Ruth and Gehrig, DiMaggio, Mantle, Jeter, and on and on. And the ballpark is favorable to him, much more favorable than Oracle Park would be. And we know that he grew up as a Giant fan. He grew up near San Francisco. But right now in the offseason, he lives in Florida. So he's part New Yorker, part Floridian. From what I can tell, even though he might have been slightly offended by the Yankees' low-ball offer before the season began, you knew his market value was higher than that, even before he hit 62 home runs. All other indications are that he really likes Aaron Boone. He likes his teammates with the Yankees. So I think the Yankees would have to mess this up for the Giants to be able to step in and steal him.
Okay, Bob, then how important do you think it is for the Giants to land a big name or two in free agency when attendance is dwindling, the fan base grew bored with the product this past season, not to mention what other teams in the division are doing?
Yeah, and you're in the division with the Dodgers. There's that. And the Padres are spending like crazy, and they had a decent, better than decent, a good postseason run. So only a year removed from winning 107 games and then playing 500 ball the following year, the Giants know what they're up against, and they have some room payroll-wise to make a move. The question is, do they make wise moves? But I would be very surprised if they didn't make significant moves this offseason.
The postseason that we referred to earlier finished with the Houston Astros completing, if not a historic run, but one of the most impressive runs in recent baseball history, and they celebrated by firing their general manager.
Right.
Is this an...
The traditional way that you celebrate such success.
Yeah, you put them on the float in the parade and then hurl them off onto the street. Is that a sign that they're about to become undone, or is this team too good to fail?
I have heard, and I'm not going to claim inside information here, but I have heard that they're very interested in David Stearns, who has been with Milwaukee and recently stepped aside from his position there and said he would remain in some capacity with the Brewers. But it seems to open the door. The Mets at one time were interested in bringing him back to New York. And I understand that the Astros might have him on their radar, and that might account for why they would jettison an otherwise obviously successful general manager, or only offer him a one-year deal as a placeholder until they could make a move for the guy they really want. Now, that's just speculation. That's what I've heard. And don't take it to the bank, because I'm giving it to you second or third hand.
Bob Costas with us on 95.7 The Game. Dusty, of course, used to manage the Giants, and he's from Northern California. So everybody around here, most people, so thrilled for him. How much credit do you think he deserves, Bob, not only for winning a World Series, but for helping baseball and the Astros perhaps get beyond the Astrogate scandal, if you will?
Yeah, I did a closing commentary, or appreciation might be the better way to put it, on HBO last week, and it's on HBO on demand now, about that very thing. The Astros needed Dusty. He was the perfect person for that circumstance, for the reasons you mentioned. But Dusty also needed them, an excellent, ready-to-win team, for one last shot at a World Series ring. Not only had that eluded him, but often heartbreakingly so. Takes five different franchises to the postseason. But you think back on all the elimination games that his teams lost at various levels, Division Series, LCS, he came so close so many times. So everybody, you know, outside of Phillies fans, was rooting for him because he's kind of a beloved wise man of the game. And this now completes his Hall of Fame resume. I'm told by people close to him that, even though he never said so publicly, that he wondered whether not having won a World Series as a manager — he did as a player with the Dodgers, but as a manager, not having won one — would keep him out of the Hall of Fame. Well, now he doesn't have to wonder about that. It'll be on his Hall of Fame plaque, and I think he's assured of being a Hall of Famer someday.
Speaking of the Hall of Fame, the idea that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Curt Schilling would never get in has been, you know, scotched by yet another committee trying to backstop the writers. Is the process by which Hall of Famers are selected becoming too arcane for the good of the sport? Or, go ahead and answer.
No, I think you have a point there, especially because in this instance, the Court of Appeals comes up next month for Bonds, Clemens, and Schilling, right after their 10 years of eligibility had run out. Now, for whatever it may be worth, as you know, broadcasters don't have a vote. But I've always said, if I had a vote, Schilling would be a no-brainer, because whatever annoys people about Schilling, and it does make me roll my eyes on occasion, has nothing to do with his performance as a player. The best strikeout-to-walk ratio of any pitcher in the modern era, since 1900, and a spectacular postseason resume that's part of baseball lore. So to me, he belongs in the Hall of Fame. And Bonds and Clemens, to me, go in a different category than some other people tainted by PED use. And that is, if they each had retired in the late 90s, before, according to what we can surmise, ever taking anything more potent than a protein shake, they each would have been first ballot Hall of Famers, especially Bonds. Clemens at that point might not have gotten as close to 100% as Bonds, but very close. So they qualified on that basis. And you really can't write a significant history of baseball without mentioning each of them prominently. Clemens was a great pitcher on his natural merits, and Barry Bonds was one of the greatest players ever in any era, one of the greatest all-around players on his natural merits. And I don't think it's to excuse what they may have done to say that when you take all those things into account, that you would put them in a different category, let's say, than someone like Rafael Palmeiro or Mark McGwire. Palmeiro has Hall of Fame numbers, but he's not a transcendent figure like Bonds or Clemens. And while I believe that had he been healthy through a lengthy career, Mark McGwire would have had a Hall of Fame career like a Harmon Killebrew in that kind of category. He wouldn't have hit a homer once every seven times at bat. He wouldn't have hit 70 homers and then 65 homers in back-to-back seasons. It just makes no sense. When in a four-year cluster, you had six 60-home run seasons, and in the whole history of baseball outside of that, there have been three, and then only barely so, 60, 61, and 62. There's no denying that, but at the same time, you can be aware of that, disapprove of it, but also take into account the differences from one case to another. So I would think that Bonds and Clemens fall into a different category.
Well, I wasn't asking so much about whether they should go in or not, because I think that debate has been chewed over a lot. But given this committee and the assumption that they are going to be even more strident about PED use than the writers were, if this committee comes out of their meetings next month and they vote in, say, Fred McGriff or Dale Murphy, but neither right. Bonds nor Clemens, does that do more damage to the notion that these committees are there to re-examine players who haven't gotten in? Do the people who believe that Bonds and Clemens have earned their way will regard the Hall of Fame as even less than they do now?
Well, they may, because people have their own opinions. And what usually happens, the members of these veterans committees, and as you know, Ray, there are 16, so it's the same principle. You got to get 75%. You got to get 12 out of 16. And some of their decisions have been curious over the years. But seldom do the members of those committees come out and explain their reasons. So it's entirely possible that out of those 16 people, there would be more than four who would say, look, we're not going to put Bonds and Clemens in the immediate aftermath of their falling off the writer's ballot. We'll wait until the next cycle, and whoever's on the committee can consider them then. But it seems like we're disregarding the will of not the majority, but more than 25% of the writers, since they didn't reach 75%. We're disregarding that, and we will reward players like McGriff and Murphy or Don Mattingly and other worthy players who are on the ballot, will reward them for their excellence and also for playing clean.
Bob Costas with us on 95.7 The Game. His new show is Back on the Record on HBO. I want to get you on the record on this, Bob, going back to Aaron Judge. And we know what a spectacular career he's had to this point and what he did last year. How likely do you think, whichever club ends up signing him, how likely are they to get value out of what is going to be a huge mega dollar deal for a larger player who is approaching, not there yet, but approaching the backside of his career?
Yeah, he's 30 years old. He's in a commanding position. So if he wants a 10-year deal and somebody's going to give it to him, I think they're swallowing hard and they're hoping that they get 5 or 6 years, something like, I mean, this 62 home run season and near triple crown might be the peak season of his career, in all likelihood it would be, but something at least approaching that for half the deal. I think potential suitors will try to resist going that far. They'll look for a 7-year deal maybe, and hope that perhaps they only have to swallow the last couple. But it's almost inevitable, to your point, especially now that They've cracked down on PEDs and amphetamines and all the rest that helped all players when they used them, but especially aging players. It's not really a good bet, no matter how great the player is, to take the player into his late 30s or early 40s. Now, there are always exceptions. Justin Verlander, pitcher's different than a position player, obviously, but Justin Verlander proves to be an exception, and there have been others. But generally speaking, it's not a great idea to go that long on a contract with a guy entering his 30s.
Let me ask an off-brand question while we still have you. How much of a soccer fan are you, and does that fandom, if it exists, include the World Cup?
You know, I watch Olympic soccer, and I watch the World Cup, but I'm not a knowledgeable soccer guy. And I apologize for that, because I realize it's the most popular sport in the world. And when I was hosting the Olympics, I made every effort to be as familiar as possible and appreciative as possible, but it's just not in my DNA. You know, I didn't grow up following it, and so it never has really grabbed me. I do pay attention, though, to where they put it. And you want to talk about sports washing? We've seen it twice with recent Olympics in Beijing. We saw it in Sochi in 2014 in Vladimir Putin's Russia. And now you go to Qatar? Qatar? Well,
yeah, that was what I was going to ask you, because you are famous for having essentially worked your way off NFL coverage by expressing your displeasure with some of the ways the game is operated, and to your credit. And so I was wondering if, even though you might be a World Cup fan, you might give this a pass because it has such a, to call it sketchy would be way too polite.
Yeah.
Such a hideous background to it that you would just say, well, I'd like to watch the World Cup, but I can't watch this one.
Hideous is not an overstatement. They have a hideous human rights record. As a viewer, I guess I could watch it partly with curiosity as to how Fox will handle it. You're there to cover the event, and people want to watch the excitement of the competition. But I think it's also your responsibility, especially in an important global event like the Olympics or the World Cup, to frame the circumstances. You don't have to shove it down people's throats, but you have to acknowledge the elephants in the room. And this is a whole pack of pachyderms in the room when you talk about Qatar. So I'll be interested to see how journalistically responsible they are. With me and the NFL, it got to the point, most people don't quite understand this, and why should they? They don't need to pay that much attention to my circumstances. But when I signed my last contract in 2012, with NBC, I stipulated that 2016 would be my last Olympics and that that would also be my final season on Sunday Night Football. So I was going to leave anyway. And I fulfilled all of that. And then there was a clause in the contract that was kind of an emeritus clause where they were going to keep me around to be to sports, as they put it, what Tom Brokaw had been to news, to make occasional appearances, maybe for interviews or for commentary, specifically for journalistic situations or historical situations. And even though I had made the comments that I had made about both the IOC and the NFL for years prior, they didn't kick me out of those positions until I'd left them of my own accord. But in an emeritus position, I think they said, geez, this guy's now more trouble than he's worth. let's settle up and wish him well. But they didn't even give me the gold watch, for God's sake.
Oh, man. Yeah. Bob Costas, it's been a pleasure. We appreciate it. Before we let you go, if I may, I'm wondering if you might be willing to share with us the story. It's every broadcaster's nightmare come true, and I think it's relatable for anybody. From Terry Pluto's book, I mentioned you used to do the Spirits of St. Louis. If you could please fill us in on the details of you missed a flight to Memphis. No, the flight was delayed, and so you're...
Yeah.
Please tell that story. It's an incredible story, sir.
Well, it's true. I'm 22 years old, right out of Syracuse University. I look like I'm about half that. I've gotten a tremendous break to be on KMOX, back when radio still was primary in terms of presenting live sports events to much of the country. And KMOX, a 50,000-watt CBS-owned and operated powerhouse. Joe Garagiola had been there. Harry Carey had been there. Jack Buck was the sports director and the voice of the Cardinals. On and on, so many tremendous sports broadcasters, and now I was part of that staff, and I'm about a month into it, thinking I'm the luckiest guy in the world, and doing pretty well, and the feedback was good. But I was an idiot. I was 22 years old, and I didn't have any money. They paid me $11,000 a year to call the spirit season and then do whatever else they found for me to do when it wasn't basketball season. And so it's Friday, and we're leaving on a trip that begins in Memphis that night, goes to San Antonio, and then goes to Salt Lake City. And I don't have any cash. So it's Friday. It's payday. I go down to the station. I go into the accounting office. I get the check. I go across the street to the bank. I cash the check, which minus the tax deductions came to $157. So now I've got it. But I'm cutting it too close. I'm driving to the airport, and I miss the flight. And my big mistake was, instead of staying at the airport, I drove back to the station to while the time away until a 5 o'clock flight to Memphis. The game is at 7:30 or 8 o'clock. And I'm sitting in the sports office, and Jack Buck walks in, and he eyes me, and he says, "Hey, kid, isn't there a game tonight?" And I blithely say, "Oh, yeah, but I got plenty of time to get there." And at that point, I'm on Jack Buck's bleep list for a while. He can't fathom that I would be this cavalier. And, of course, he was right. So now I head back to the airport, and a thunderstorm hits. I get there. I'm at the gate in plenty of time, but the flight is delayed. So now I'm finally aboard the flight, and it's descending into Memphis. And it's about 7:45, and tip-off is 8 o'clock. And I'm sweating bullets as I grab a cab, and I rush to the arena and throw my bags down and hop right into the seat behind the microphone. And back at KMOX, they've been telling the audience that they have technical difficulties. And technically they did, because technically I was an idiot. And so I come on the air about 4 minutes into the first quarter, fully convinced that the next day I'll be on a plane back to Syracuse and my career will be ruined. So I finished the broadcast. The next morning, I had to be on the first flight, not to San Antonio, but back to St. Louis on a Saturday morning to meet with the general manager of the station, who took pity on me. He said, "You know, you're a nice kid, and we think you have potential, but if you ever do anything like this again, you're out the door." So he gave me a reprieve, and I never repeated that particular bit of foolishness.
I'm curious, if you were an idiot at 22, how old were you when you transcended from idiotdom to actually being who you are now?
I don't know if I've ever completely put idiocy behind me. There's still some quirks in there, but you know, I guess you get your footing after a while. And maybe when I landed at NBC, I was still in my late 20s when I landed at NBC, and had a little bit of success there. Then maybe I began to establish the style that people now recognize, whatever that is.
Well, NBC once hired me, and I've never not been an idiot, so that's not a disqualifier.
All right, yeah, there you go. Bob Costas, thank you very much, sir. We appreciate it.
Whitey, Ray, thanks a lot. Happy Thanksgiving.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.